Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conscious Animal Radio. I'm your host, Christine Agro. I'm so happy to be back at my regular time, but I have to say last week was definitely worth it. I hosted a week-long show at 6 o'clock every night for Conversation Week 2008, which was a project that was created by Conversation Cafe, and we talked about the 10 most important questions facing us today. It was such a great project to participate in, and you can listen to the show archives at blogtalkradio.com/conscious-living. And I feel like I have so much to tell you. Like it feels like it's been a long time. Let's see, an update on Christopher. I don't know what's going on with him. He's Christopher the cat, for those of you who may be just listening for the first time. He's my show mascot, and he's our senior adopted cat. And he's really developing a very interesting relationship with my son Caden, who's four. He'll be four at the end of April, and keeps telling everybody he's going to be five. but this morning, I was sleeping, and Caden got up and was sitting on the couch and being patient and waiting for me to get up, which was very nice of him. And I think Caden was getting a little antsy, so Christopher came running into the bedroom and jumped up on the bed and started biting my arms and hands, and and I knew he wanted me to get up. I knew he was concerned that Caden was out on the couch by himself and I wasn't out there, and so I finally did, and I also let Christopher know that I just was not happy about that way of getting me up and out of bed. So my guest today is Tim Link, who's founder of Wagging Tails and president of the Forsyth County Humane Society in Georgia. Tim's an animal communicator and also a Reiki master, and we're going to be talking about the integration of the work, the type of work that I do with clairvoyance and animal communication work and energy work into the rescue process. But first I want to answer a question I got on the Conscious Animal Radio Enlightened Listeners line from Donna in Massachusetts. And Donna, this is her question.
Hi, I have a little five-year-old mixed chihuahua, Maltese, and once in a great while he goes to stretch and then falls over because his legs cramp up. And I'm going to be calling this dog, but this just happened over the past 2-3 weeks and not all the time. He doesn't cry or anything, doesn't seem like he's in pain, but then he can't walk.
So, Donna, the thing that I notice when I look at your dog is the energy along his back. It looks like that there is some problem with the nerve impulses in the lower spine, and it looks like there may have been some damage done to his back. So it's not arthritis. It's not back in the hips. It's not in the legs. I actually see it coming from the nerve impulses coming from the spine, so the nerve impulses that tell the back of the legs, the back of the body, to work and function. So something is sort of short-circuiting that, and when that happens, he has no information going, and his legs just sort of collapse. So there's a couple of things that you can do. You can use energy work. You can do some acupressure. You can get acupuncture done. Sometimes chiropractic work can help, and then you can also use some essential oils along the spine to help re-stimulate the nerve impulses. And let me see, something like juniper, helichrysum, ravensara, those are three really good oils to consider, and you would just mix them with an apricot oil base and just massage them into the spine. But I think that really the energy work aspect is probably going to be your best bet in helping him, the acupuncture and then possibly some chiropractic work, because it just, like I said, it looks like the impulses coming from the spine aren't actually getting to the back of the body when that happens. Okay, so I also want to let listeners know that if you do call into the Enlightened Listeners line and ask me questions about your animals, I can't call you back, nor can I email you back. So you will get your response on the show, and you have to listen to get it. I just wanted to let you know that. And I think I have some news pieces that I want to go over today, but I'm pretty sure that Tim's here. So let me just check. If he is, we'll go to Tim, and then we'll check in with the news pieces towards the end of the show. Hi, Tim. Are you there?
Hi, Christine. Yes, I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great today. How about yourself?
I'm really good, thank you. You're not on a speakerphone, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay. You're a little echoey far away, but that's okay.
Okay, we'll see if we can get a better connection and get a little closer to base here. Apologize for that.
Oh, that's much better. Thank you. Great. So I'm really excited about talking to you about integrating. I don't really want to call it like, I don't like calling it alternative or complementary work, because I really think it's work that integrates the natural, the innate healing ability that an animal has, into their lives. And so I really kind of stay away from calling it alternative or complementary, mm-hmm. but then I'm lost without another word for it. So.
Well, I think that, when you go into, right now, I think you do have to look at it as sort of complementary or alternative, because it's not part of the mainstream. Mm-hmm. But what we need to accomplish as animal communicators and as pet owners and human companions is we need to help our veterinarians realize that there are other methods and additional methods that they should be integrating into their normal practices. So it doesn't always have to be a shot. It doesn't always have to be, pharmaceutical medications. The answers you gave your previous caller is wonderful examples of that. Essential oils. Flower essences, plant essences are wonderful. All those homeopathic remedies that are out there, more and more of them are getting geared towards our animals, which they should be.
I mean, I think that for me, the important piece is recognizing that animals have not strayed away from being connected to that innate ability to heal themselves. You know, they retain that. We strip it away from them by applying the Western medical philosophy to their health care. And I think, as always, from the work that I do, they have so much to teach us, because they really haven't gotten that far away from it, fortunately. And when we introduce things that really support their natural ability to heal, they just, they respond so positively to it, because that's all that's really required, is this support of what's already there. And I'm not saying that there aren't times when Western medicine is necessary and appropriate, but I always do encourage people to start with, unless it's something, really urgent, to start with things that are more in keeping with that natural innate ability to heal the body, to support it and encourage it, rather than just coming in heavy-handed and knocking it out with some kind of medicine or something that just knocks it right out.
Exactly.
So tell me, I know when I got your email, I was so intrigued because to have someone with your background and doing the work that you do, and then you're president of the Forsyth County Humane Society in Georgia. How long have you been involved with the Humane Society?
Well, with the Forsyth County Humane Society, I've been involved for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. I'm newly elected president as of this year, but I've had heavy involvement in working with the animals, getting some behavioral issues solved with them, getting them comfortable with their new either forever homes or their foster homes or at the shelter. So I've had heavy involvement with this group for about 5 years, and I'm also involved in quite a few other organizations, rescue groups throughout Georgia and nationally as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to keep the pulse where I can get hands-on work. I'll do that, and obviously from a national basis, if I can do it remotely or get involved in animal issues or some of the legislation that's going on for animal rights and causes for animals, I try to get involved in that as well.
Right. So when you started with them 5 years ago, you started with them on the board 5 years ago?
No, about 5 years ago, it was just a volunteer.
Okay.
And I think that this is an important thing for people that want to have a great experience, want to feel good about what they're doing, and be around some wonderful animals on a regular basis. Get involved as a volunteer.
Right.
They're always looking for people that either are just socializing with the animals or bringing your skill set. So if you're a financial planner, they need that kind of experience. If you're a computer IT person, they need that kind of experience.
I need that kind of experience.
<I do too. laughs> So we'll get you one volunteer for you too.
Well, and so I guess when you started with them 5 years ago, did you start automatically bringing your your information in, or did it take you a while to integrate it into being involved with them?
Well, what I found out with all the wonderful shelter volunteers that we have and the board that we had when I came on board was they want, like all of us, what's best for their animal.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were in tune and knew what Reiki energy was. Perhaps they've experienced it themselves, but never for their pets.
What is Reiki energy for everyone who's listening and might not know?
So Reiki is a form of another energy modality. It is a hands-on or hands-off healing modality. It comes from a Japanese background dating back thousands of years. And it's another, as I said, it's a way to get your energy in balance. So when I work with an animal, I can feel certain areas from a medical standpoint. Even though I'm not a veterinarian, I can feel where they're having issues or blockages, where the energy is not flowing through them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do is work on using the Reiki energy in addition to identifying which chakras are blocked and work with them till we can get all those chakras open and let that energy flow through, and thus making them feel better and more comfortable and more in line with where their body should be.
So, and chakras, we're talking energy centers in the body that can hold all sorts of different kinds of energy and information, right?
Oh, exactly. And you know, so you see, you have your seven chakras that sort of go right through the center of your body from your base all the way up through your crown or your head chakra. And with humans as well as animals, all these chakras have to be open and receptive to let the energy flow through. And if there is one that is blocked, and where the energy is getting stagnant, it tends to stay in one place, thus causing illnesses or areas that are not at ease with the animal, whether it's physically or mentally, et cetera. And the same thing with humans. If there's a blockage in us, we're not getting the proper energy flow through our body to make us feel mentally and physically strong.
Right. I noticed we have a caller here. Do you mind if I go to a caller and see what they have, and then we'll come back to talking about this integration?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Hi, caller. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's Christine Agro. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you have a question or comment?
I actually do. I have a 7-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Uh-huh.
And she has a couple issues, but I'm more concerned about what she should be eating.
Okay. What is she eating right now?
She's eating ProPlan chicken and rice.
Okay. And you said she's how old?
She's 7.
I'm getting that the chicken and the rice is not necessarily the right thing for her. I may have to get back to you about what exactly is. For some reason, I'm seeing beef, but I want to double check and make sure that that's right.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's right for her. I don't think she's always hungry.
Yeah, that's what I see. There's a real leanness to the chicken,
mm-hmm.
And I think she needs a little more. There's a little more substance that's required, and I think it's the beef that she needs, or more of like a red meat base for the Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some digestive issues going on. So
yes.
I think if you add in a digestive enzyme, that's going to help.
Yeah, I was wondering what would be good for that.
Well, there are some plant-based ones out there that work well, and there's
from a health food store.
Yeah, there's also Prozyme is the one that's usually the most used. Tim, do you have any recommendations?
I would take a look at the Bach line of flower remedies.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
there's an excellent line from Bach that starts off with the rescue remedy as sort of the basis for everything that they do. It's a nice calming essence, and then they have other essences you can add on to there that will solve certain issues within your animal system, digestive issues as well. But going back, Christine, you're absolutely right on what you're identifying here, what you're picking up. There's a lot of foods out there that are chicken and rice based, and people feel that chicken is an easily processed item within an animal, and it's actually one of the tougher meats for them to process. Mm-hmm. Pure beef type or a lamb or even if you went to rabbit or venison, is easier for a dog to digest.
I see the venison, for me it really depends on the breed. I mean, I have this ability to see, like, what are they, breed-wise, what actually can they function with? Because some of the dogs really do well with chicken.
Do-do
with chicken. But for the Rhodesian, I'm really getting the red meat. So, I would do the Prozyme, and switch to a beef base. I think if you can add some, are you feeding kibble or are you feeding wet food? What are you feeding?
No, it's dry.
Dry?
Dry, okay. Kibble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would switch it and then also maybe look at adding in some actual meats because that whole process of being able to chew the meat is,
right.
is really different. It gets the saliva.
She doesn't chew anything. She swallows everything,
she's
yeah.
She's always hungry. And I think
she's wolfing, yes.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. part of the you know, the digestive enzyme's going to help her actually break her food down. I think a little more fiber to her food, too, to slow it down as it's going through her system is going to really help her out. So give that a try.
And I just started walking her. I just finished reading Caesar's Leader of the Pack.
Uh-huh.
And because I figured she has a lot of anxiety and a lot of pent-up dog stuff, you know. So we've been walking. And the other issue that she has something going on with both of her eyes. She has a spot on both of her eyes.
So just going back to Tim's recommendation about the flower essences, that's why he was recommending that. Because,
mm-hmm.
because she has all of that sort of tension and
yes.
and angst and you know
mm-hmm.
when I look at it, a lot of it comes from, and you're absolutely right, by you know, getting Caesar's book and reading it and following that information, it's coming from her not knowing what's expected of her and what the boundaries are and what the rules are. So the more you take charge and the more you give her some parameters to work in, and when I say take charge, I don't mean like I don't mean in like an authoritarian kind of way. I mean
right.
more of like a parent-child sort of way, where you're setting up the boundaries for her so that she really knows this is where, you know, this is where I'm supposed to function within, and I get it and I feel safe within it. Because dogs, you know, unless they have that, most of them, they really are uncertain and they're not really clear about what they're supposed to be doing. I worked with a client the other day who has a Lhasa Apso who was just barking, 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 and neither the husband or the wife were letting the dog know that they were safe. So the dog was just out of control with trying to always be protecting. And so once we addressed that, she emailed me and she said, he growls a little bit, but that's about it. So, I mean, you know, it just makes a huge difference.
Well, I've seen her calm down in a week, just
yeah.
a week. I've
yeah.
seen a big difference.
Great. So,
but
yes.
the food, I was wondering about the food. I wanted to try the natural raw diet.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel comfortable yet.
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing, but I really recommend that when you do that you also integrate a teaspoon of liquid chlorophyll and a tablespoon of aloe vera juice once a day
Teaspoon of chlorophyll.
Yeah, and a tablespoon of aloe vera juice.
Aloe. Mm-hmm.
Into it once a day into the diet, because
mm-hmm.
animals or people, when we switch to a raw diet, our body automatically goes into a detox. And a lot of times, animals especially will end up with you know, with some sort of like skin eruption, and
mm-hmm.
people go, oh my gosh, you know, it's the food, and I shouldn't do this, and they switch back to the
mm-hmm.
processed stuff. And really, if you just support it with like a nice, and the digestive enzyme will help too, if you just support it with like a nice gentle detox, that should
And you
help.
Said Prozyme for the digestive enzyme?
That's what I
Is
see resonating
Prozyme?
With her. I
uh-huh.
see that resonating with her. So Tim, do you want to add anything else that kind of got off there?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think if you're wanting to stick to a more, you're not prepared to go raw, but you're wanting to stick to a more all beef type diet, there are some wonderful foods out there by Wysong. It's
mm-hmm.
Wysong.
Wysong. Uh-huh.
And Solid Gold.
Okay.
Solid Gold puts out a wet canned version, a dry kibble, as well as a dried, dehydrated all-beef patty that you can
okay.
take on trips with you and take them out as training treats, those type of things, and it's in a nice little patty, and it adds some extra fiber, too.
Yeah,
so those are a good way to go.
Wysong and Solid Gold.
Yeah. What about Honest Kitchen, Tim? Because don't they have like the freeze-dried, sort of raw food freeze-dried kind of thing? You just rehydrate,
right.
I think.
Yeah, they're a wonderful group also. Merrick, M-Y-R-E-K, I believe, is been around for a while, but it's now getting a lot of marketing behind it. And it's actually very, very good.
Merrick,
food.
Yeah, I
very
love it.
M-E-R-C-K,
Merrick.
M-E-R-C-K.
Yeah. They're great.
Another high quality. So go to you may find it at your local big block store like a Petco or a PetSmart, but you may have to go to a more specialized.
Yeah, I have one close by. Yeah, I have one close by I can check with.
Yeah.
Yeah, but go online.
Yeah, online. So you can always find it online.
Yeah, find it online. Go on there and do a search and try some of those out. Integrate them slowly into the new diet, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think Christine's absolutely right. The more exercise you're going to get, not only is your wonderful furry friend going to get calmer, but it's also going to help the digestive tract.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you start with that gentle detox before you switch the diet, that can help too. So just start adding it in now.
The chlorophyll and the aloe vera,
and I would also add the digestive enzyme.
Enzyme, okay.
Yeah. And then then you can gradually start to shift to a diet that's more substantial. There's a lots of options. You can use your kibble and throw in some cooked meat into it if you want to do that. You can switch it completely. There's definitely lots of options out there.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, well, thanks, Tim, for participating in that.
Yeah, that was great. I think she's on the right track. You know,
yeah.
It's important for us to try to find the top quality foods for our animals' bodies, just like we try to find the top quality foods for our bodies.
Absolutely. And I think, it's funny about that whole thing with the switching to raw, because, I go back and forth. I can't seem to keep myself on a raw diet. When it starts to get cold, I'm like, my mind just goes, I need soup, I know that when you do switch, that oftentimes there is, the toxins start to come out of the body. And I've then since seen that with animal clients where, the people say, they had a skin eruption and I switched back to the kibble because it obviously didn't work for them. And I'm like, no, that's actually a good thing. You just don't want it to happen so quickly.
That's right.
Be able to support it and help shift it out. So let's go back to talking about the Humane Society because I want to talk more about how you came to integrate your work into the Humane Society. So we were back 5 years, and you had just started with them, and I was wondering.
Right. So 5 years ago, started doing some volunteer work with them and trying to socialize more with the animals and trying to bring my gifts to life to do the Reiki energy healing and do the communication aspect of it to understand what their background was, where they came from, what they're experiencing now, and how can we get them to a calmer state. And admittedly, there were people within the group that were very receptive. They knew of these things and were excited to be able to have a volunteer to be able to bring it to light. Other ones were very skeptical, and fortunately they kept quiet because they figured, well, what harm can it do?
Right.
And others that, just didn't want any part of it at all. And that's okay, because you have to be comfortable with these things, and you have to realize there's nothing to hurt you. It can only help you. And so why not try this? Why not give this an effort and see if we get some positive responses? And we have. We found a lot of positive responses, getting these animals calmed down, getting them into a good place, and making them more readily to be adopted. Because when you come into a shelter or you're going to your local pet store for adoption day, you want a dog that is calm and wants to be with you and is not scared or barking. And so I try to work with them to get them to a point where they do feel a lot calmer about where they are and a lot more focused about where they are, so they can have a better chance to getting adopted.
Yeah, and it can be, I know what I find with rescues is that it can just be so confusing for them, where they were one place one minute and they thought that they had this really, some of them thought that they had this really good relationship and they were doing what they were supposed to be doing and contributing what they were supposed to be contributing, and the next minute, they're with like 50 other dogs in a cage and,
right,
everybody's gone.
Exactly, with no explanation why they were there.
Right, right. And, especially with, I don't know what's going on down in Georgia, but especially with all this, with all the housing foreclosures and these people who not only are losing their homes but have to give up their animals because they have to go someplace where animals aren't accepted. And I just, I just really feel for those. I feel for the people, but I feel for the animals, because certainly in that situation, nobody wants to separate. It's not like the animal's doing something wrong. It's not like the people don't want them anymore. It's just circumstances. And they're I think it's really hard on everybody. And I don't know, how is that, is that having an impact down there for you guys?
Yeah, oh, definitely it is. I mean, you've got a lot of things coupled here. You're talking about the housing situation, the mortgages, people not being able to keep up with their mortgages, so they have to get rid of their homes, like you had mentioned, so now they have to downsize. You have that dynamic. You also have the dynamic of the unemployment rate going up,
right,
people being forced to move out of their homes and find maybe jobs that provide less of an income, or maybe move away from the area where they can't bring their animal with them.
Right.
And then obviously the stress of just those two also puts a lot of pressure on the family dynamic, causing more pressure and more stress on the family. And with, when we start talking about putting financial pressure on husbands and wives, you know, a lot of times those type of things lead to divorce.
Right.
And when you've got a divorce situation, once again, the dog usually ends up going to the shelter, because...
And in New York, you end up going to court, but...
Yeah, exactly. And fighting over the dog, and then
right,
the person gets the dog and realizes they don't want the dog.
Right.
But, yeah, so we get that. And so I've got sort of a cardinal rule number one. This is Uncle Tim's cardinal rule number one. And what I always tell everybody with their animals is that in order to have a calmer animal, one that is feeling good about what's going on and having less anxiety when you're leaving the house or leaving the animal for any purpose, I always ask their human companions to tell the dog where they're going,
mm-hmm,
when they'll be back, and what they should do while they're gone.
That's great.
The three things you should always do. So this is no matter if you're going out to the mailbox and coming back, or whether you have to drop off your animal and they can no longer live in your family and you have to take them to your local no-kill shelter to find a better forever home. The animal needs to know where you're going. You're no longer able to keep them because you have to downsize the house. What time you'll be back, and in some cases you won't be back, but you're going to help these good people are going to help you find a good forever home. And here's what I need you to do. I need you to be a good, happy puppy, be calm. You're going to find a great family, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so that's the same thing if you're just leaving for work today, or if you're going to the mailbox, where it may be, because they do have a lot of anxiety, and they're very close to us, and they're very in tune to us, and they want to make sure that they're there for us. And, you know, face it, if we were to leave the house and we didn't tell our spouse or our kid where we're going and when we're going to be back, I think they'd be pretty fretful, too.
I know. I talk about that a lot, about, you know, trying to understand from an animal's perspective, and let's use a dog as an example, and I talk about being conscious, and just imagine how you would feel if you're walking down the street and somebody came up to you and just patted your head. You know, if you just think about it, if you think about how you would react in certain situations, it can really help you to better understand what your animals need in terms of feeling confident and secure and just living, you know, healthy and happy existence. I just wanted to mention to you, it sounds like that you do a lot with Bach Flower. Over the years, I've noticed that the resonation of Bach, it works, but it's much lower than it used to be. And so I work with Flower Essence Society flowers now. They're much higher vibration.
Oh, wonderful.
So you may want to just check that out and see how it resonates with you and resonates with your friends that you're helping. And the great thing about it is that Bach addressed the 38 flowers that were from the Depression era.
Mm-hmm.
And with Flower Essence Society, they've gone beyond that, and they really address a lot of spiritual issues. They've got a new line that I think looks like it would really be great with you guys, which is it's called Sierra Lights or something. But it's all about, you know, a lot of their stuff is about spiritual evolution and consciousness and getting along. And so it goes beyond the 38 from Bach. And they carry the 38 as well. They make those too. But, that was
wonderful.
Puppy soap bars that just fell on the floor, if anybody noticed them. but, yeah, I just wanted to mention that because I think there's probably some other places you can go with that would be really helpful. Like Mariposa Lily is for abandonment issues, and I find that works really well. Mallow is for trust.
Mm-hmm.
So just integrating those, especially with that rescue process. So let me go. Here's the thought that's been running around in my head, because before I really owned my clairvoyant abilities and went back to school and did my my naturopathic healing work and everything, I was a fundraiser. And so, you know, when I hear things and I look at things, my little wow, you could get money for that goes off in my head. And I'm just wondering if there is a way to, you know, not only have some money come into the Humane Society, but also as a really important tool, if there's a grant that you could apply for or funding that you could get in order to do a study that would then become some kind of documentation that could be shared with the humane societies across the country, and then other rescues as well.
That's a good point, focusing around the gifts and the methodologies that I use.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good point. We do have a grant writing team that I actually started with our group about a year and a half ago. It's a challenge finding grants out there, and because there, fortunately for us, there are more and more rescue groups entering into our societies, which
right.
is great news. But obviously, funds are tight, and the more people vying for them, the tougher it gets to get the grants. And but it's a good point to explore that. I had not explored that end of it, because typically most of the grants that we find out there are focused on two or three central areas. They're spay and neuter opportunities, low-income spay and neuter, or special projects. And special projects, they're looking more like we have a feral cat program, which we
right.
do a trap, spay, neuter, and release or adopt out program. And then we follow that up with setting up feeding stations in key locations throughout the county.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones that do go back into their feral societies will have places that they can come on a daily basis and get food and shelter. So unique programs like that does lend to grants being offered to organizations like our own. The challenge I find so far, though, Christine, is the fact that though the world is getting more and more enlightened to all these wonderful things, you know, becoming more spiritually aware, becoming more aware of what we call alternative or homeopathic methods for themselves and their animals, it's still very slow. It's very slow to take off. Yeah, and I notice you've probably experienced that too. You know, trying to get the majority of society to accept it and give it a try is something we're still working on.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, one of the reasons I was so intrigued in talking to you about this is because, you know, I have often volunteered my services and they're never accepted, and I just accept that and I go on, and I mean, I contribute in a lot of other ways, doing different things, and I'm fine with that. But you know, and I always just look at it and say, okay, well, that's not something that really resonates there, and I understand it. And I don't really have the time to really push it or sort of coax it and coach it in that way. So I just sort of, I'll put it out there, and if it's not okay, then I just move along.
Right, right.
But I do find it interesting, you know, because I mean, you talked about vets, and I think that is, I have some vets who really honor what I do and will even say to their clients, you know, give Christine a call and she can, you know, maybe she can give us better information about what's going on here, and then we can address it, you know, more completely. To, you know, the vet who, I mean, unfortunately, I was working with a client's dog, and when I looked, I could see that there was a tumor, and I said, I think we have to take him in. And so we did, and when I said that to the vet, you know, I could see the eyes roll in their head. And unfortunately, I mean, there was a tumor there. And then he looked at me like, how did you know that? Like the same way I told you in the beginning. Like, I mean, you know, it just, so I think it is, I mean, I guess what I do is I just don't really, I don't really concern myself with that aspect of it. I do what I do.
That's right.
And when people come to me, they come to me, and that's how I approach it. It's not, but I would like to see it change. You know, I would like to see a greater awareness. I have a dream of, you know, a training program that not only trains, you know, individuals, but also trains people who are in the veterinary community and in how to really see inside the body and use the tools that we have in order to help animals on a greater level. But at the same time, I know that as soon as you, and I mean, this is probably a bias on my part, and I'd like to know what you think, but as soon as you introduce that ability to a vet, then they want to claim it and not allow anyone else to use it, which,
right.
You know, I have a problem with. I mean, I don't think that acupuncture should only be in the veterinarian community. I think that the amount of training that they get compared to the amount of training that an acupuncturist who goes to school for 4 years gets is far more substantial. But yet that acupuncturist is not allowed to work on an animal.
Right. No, I would agree with you on that. I mean, there's, you know, when we talk about claiming things of our own and trying to hold on to them, that, you know, that is a true human issue. You know, ego is our problem. I talk to a lot of my clients about how we're all made up of the same energy, whether it's we come here as animal form or human form. It's all energy. It's source energy, however you want to label it. And we all come down here for a mission. The animals, however, can usually complete their mission because they stay focused. They don't get caught up in ego like us humans do, or life like us humans do, you know, getting the car, getting the job, getting the house, getting, you know, the 2.5 kids and, you know, being part of the socialite group. They don't get caught up in all that. So with humans, we can lose our focus on what our true purpose and what our true mission is. So when you talk about veterinarians trying to, you know, traditional veterinarians, if they accept it, to try to call it their own, it's just one of those human things again. It's one of those ego things that they try to do.
I know.
And we've got to, as a society, to get around that and realize that as a collective, we need to do what's best for us, which includes our animals.
Very true. And I think that's the opportunity that's before us right now. And I think that's one of the reasons there's so much conflict on the planet, is that we have this you know, more fluid way of approaching life being presented to us, and then we have the way that we're used to, which is more about control and fear and sort of that gripping, constricting energy, not wanting to let go. You know, it's like
exactly. Well, so, if you take a look just at history in general, you take a look at histories of wars over the, you know, thousands of years. All of it's been due to control, and it's all been due to the conflict that started because people wanted to claim things of their own and did not want to share and wanted to claim it as theirs and wanted complete control over it, and thus getting their egos in a way. And, as a society, we've got to sort of get away from that. And that's where animals come into play, because they don't have those hang-ups. They don't have those issues. We need to actually just observe our animals, and we're going to learn a lot and get ourselves in a better place if we just watch what they do and see how they act.
Right. So I don't know if you're aware of this, especially being involved with the Humane Society. I'd love to know what your thought is on this, because every time I read a story about flex pets, I get this really uneasy feeling. So are you familiar with flex pets?
Flex pets? No.
Okay. Well, let me just go through this little. This was one of my news pieces in the New York Times again yesterday, and it's been reported about in the past, but there was another article about flex pets, and it's a business where they rescue dogs and then they rent them out to people who only want a dog for a day or a weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
And you know, I think that, you know, it might work for some dogs, but I think for most, to me it just looks confusing and upsetting. And every time I read it, I think, there's something really wrong with that. I've suggested to listeners that going to the Humane Society or any rescue and committing your time that way, if you really want to spend time with an animal, rather than, like, renting them, it bugs me. And I'm just curious what you think about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't familiar with the terminology, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I was actually in one of the most enlightened places in the world, Maui, Hawaii. So I was in Maui a couple years ago, and this was the first time I was introduced to this, what they call flex pets, but rent-a-pet.
Rent-a-pet, yeah.
And they had a big sign saying rent-a-pet for a day, and I'm like, well, first of all, no.
Right.
And second of all, why would you rent a pet for a day? And so I went and inquired a little bit more about it, and it was because, A, maybe you were on the island and you missed your pet at home, so it gave you the companion for the day. Others were for personal socializing capabilities,
mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to meet people
it's easier to meet people if you got a cute little pet running alongside of you. You know, it was basically for all what I view as all the wrong reasons.
Me too.
Yeah. Your pet's there as a part of you. You're there to learn from your pet, and they're there to serve whatever their purpose is for you. So it's their mission that they come into your life.
Right.
And whether that's to heal you, to teach you, to provide you love, whatever that purpose is, that animal will fulfill that mission and fulfill that purpose. Now, of course, they'll also have their jobs, you know, their job that you assign them, which may be, you know, protect the house or watch over the kids or, you know, go fetch my slippers, whatever it is, the jobs you're teaching them, they'll enjoy those as well.
Right.
But when we come down to, you know, the flex pets or renting of pets, that would, if it was a type of situation where I had my pet and he knew he was coming home every night to my loving house and I just loaned him out to someone for the day to exercise them, then that's a little bit different story. It could be playtime, but renting them out for extended periods of time, that's just, personally, I don't see why you would do that. You're treating that animal now as property, and the animal really is not property. That it should be a very important part of your life, an important part of your family.
Right, and I mean, if you, again, put it, assign like a human correlation to it, it would be like, I mean, the idea of what, renting a child?
Yeah, rent a kid for a day.
You know, rent a kid.
Wow.
That's to me, like, you know, I don't really have time for a child. I just want to rent one for a day. You know, they're cute and can help you pick people up.
Exactly. So. Great pickup line. So it's not mine, but I do this kind of, I help my family out by picking little junior out for the day.
Right.
Whoa, gosh, no. I don't know. What happened to the old pickup lines of what's your sign?
Right.
Not, is this your kid? Not a good thing.
Yeah, but I read that. So that's Maui, and there's one in New York. There's one in California somewhere, and I just read there's one in Tokyo. I mean, they're not all FlexPet is an actual business. That's what they call themselves.
Oh,
but they seem to be the ones that always get the attention. But, you know, their point is, they've rescued these dogs, and I just keep wanting to go. And you know, you've rescued
exactly.
them from
okay,
what?
So they rescued them, and now they're my property, and I can do whatever I want to with them.
Right.
You know,
morally
not a correct way to look at things, in my opinion. But bringing your point back to the shelters, if you want to spend time, if you really want that connection, maybe you're not in a position where you can take care of an animal full time. Maybe you're not in the home to be able to have the animal that you really want. You know, you're renting an apartment or whatever it may be. Go to your local shelters. Go to your local no-kill rescue groups. There are hundreds and thousands of them. There's over 600 and some in Georgia alone. So in the state of New York, I'm sure it's even larger because it's a very enlightened state. And it's not just dogs and cats. There are rescue groups for horses, for you name it, any animal out there you could possibly think of. We've got one down here that is for it's mink rescue. So they rescue minks. There's some that do specific types of animals, whether it's schnauzers or golden retriever rescue. There are some that do ferrets. We have a ferret rescue group. So whatever your animal choice is, if you're wanting to just get involved, touch the life of people and of animals and find out if there's a right animal for you or at least just get that quality time with them, the rescue groups need your help desperately. There's so much to do, and the volunteer base is what makes it successful. And there's always something you can do for them and at the very least go in and socialize them because these animals don't get the hands-on love that they need just because there's just not enough people to help
right.
them out.
And you can take that $300 a month membership fee to FlexPets and give it to the shelter.
Oh, my gosh. $300 a month. Just to give you an idea, we have a special program here in Georgia where it is through funding. They buy down the cost of a spay and neuter. You can spay and neuter in the state of Georgia one animal, cat or dog, for $15. So do quick arithmetic and figure that for your $300 a month, you can spay and neuter 20 dogs or cats. So when you take a look at a cat can produce 3 litters a year, a female cat, and a litter is an average size of 6 to 9 in a litter. So let's take the high end. 9 times 3 is 27. Mm-hmm.
So just in that 1 year, by just taking spay and neutering that one cat, in this case neutering the one cat, or spaying the one cat, you've just actually saved the life of not only that cat, but 27 other cats that could be roaming the streets and be in jeopardy.
Right, and not to mention the female cats will take, what, maybe half a year to come into heat and then have two cycles within a year. So you
exactly. Exactly. There's not enough fingers and toes
right,
in the body
to
be able to count
math,
this up.
So.
it's literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of cats each and every year are born on the streets of America. And all we need to do is spay and neuter them. So
right.
$300 you're doing for that. That time is the same with dogs. Also, the litters are a little bit smaller, but similar type of numbers.
You know, Texas has an interesting program that PetSmart Charities helped them set up. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, PetSmart Charities is one of our favorite. We got a nice grant for our feral cat program through PetSmart. So
they helped them down in Texas set up Fix Houston, and the goal is that they've implemented these five spay and neuter clinics around Houston, and the goal is that within 5 years there will be no more strays because of that.
Wonderful.
I know. I thought
wonderful.
It was a great project. So there's, I guess it's a test project to see how it does, and then I think their intention is to try to implement at other places. So we should keep your ear to the ground on that one.
That's a great program. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. PetSmart does wonderful work.
Yeah.
And you know, even it's interesting to say that when you talk about spay and neutering and how many lives it can save and how many unwanted pregnancies can be avoided with dogs and cats. But even if you just boil it down from a pure social and economical standpoint, obviously strays that are running through our neighborhoods, they have to find food, and sometimes they get into areas that we don't want them in, thus causing a nuisance. In addition, it costs each city or each county that has their own animal control, it costs to maintain that because they have to maintain a shelter for those animals. They have to hire, rescue or I should say police officers or sheriff's officers to go out and get these animals and collect them up. So as taxpayers, it's costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars each year
right. For
that purpose. So even if you find those people that aren't enlightened enough to know how wonderful these creatures are and how much they can make your life a better life while you're here, just look at it from a pure social and economical standpoint. That taxpayer money that you're using to collect these animals, if there were no more unwanted animals around, that could go for better education and better schools in our area. It touches the lives of a lot of people. So if you can just take one animal and get spay and neutered, then you've actually saved a lot more than just that one animal.
That and if you really, really can't keep your animal in your home, don't just turn them loose. Like, that just doesn't work.
They're not. Yeah, their lineage from years and years and years ago may have been wild animals, but you know, they're domesticated animals. They need the same type of food and shelter and care that we need. And they may try to make do, but their lives are shortened drastically. I know an average cat that's been released from their home into the wild. Their average lifespan is only about 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Compared to if you keep them in your home, a cat can live 15-plus years easily.
Right. And I go back to my analogy of, you know, looking at it from a human perspective. Again, you wouldn't just go, you know what, I've had enough with my child. I'm just going to let them go.
Thank God.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I'll set some food out on the step for them.
Right, that's enough. Out you go. You know? You're fine.
Exactly.
You can handle it.
Yeah, you can handle it. Get it on your own, yeah. No, we obviously haven't, and hopefully one of these days we will come to this as a society that we'll know that that they're such a vital part of our lives, these animals, and we need to treat them accordingly.
I mean, it'd be very interesting and I think poignant, satire movie or documentary or short or something if you actually did produce something that really, you know, showed that dynamic of like, well, here's what we do with animals, and if you actually looked at it from a human perspective, how crazy does this look?
That's very true.
It would be interesting.
Yeah, well, it's very, very true. I mean, it's...
Well, there was that vet who actually, to discipline his son, he put him in a dog crate.
Oh, my gosh.
And he got in trouble. He got in big trouble. And
yeah, that's going to...
Rightfully so.
Exactly. Rightfully so. Yeah, we don't want to go that extreme, but they are. I mean, they are here to help us and to teach us as well. You know, they don't appear in our life by accident.
They don't.
They absolutely
do not. There's an agreement between us and our animals, and there's always something for us to learn from them. And I, you know, I believe that there are things for them to learn from us, and that actually shifts the relationship dynamic. But there are reasons that they're in our life, and they've been in our lives for such a long time, doing many things for us and helping us. So, and if you can hear the street beeping, that is New York City, folks.
Wonderful.
So great. Do you have anything else before we wrap up? I really appreciate you being here today. And I do think, though, if there's a way to somehow document the work that you're doing, and that it would be interesting to share it either at a conference for the Humane Society or, you know, as some sort of resources for other rescues, so that they can understand how this work can really benefit the animals. It might be a really great thing.
Oh, definitely so. I mean, that's a very, very good point. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of we do have to become enlightened to the other options that we have out there, and as animal communicators and energy healers, and the things that we bring to the table can only help and can solve a lot of issues as well. So, you know, I just encourage everybody to, if you don't own a pet, they bring a lot of joy to your life, so consider it, whatever your type of pet that you're looking for. There are always wonderful rescue organizations out there. Get involved with your local rescue groups, either as a volunteer or donate your money if you don't have the time to save the lives and better the lives of not only the animals, but the people that adopt these animals. They'll be very, very thankful for that. I encourage you that if you're looking for an animal, take a look at your shelters and the rescue groups first, especially for dogs and cats. There's a lot of purebreds out there. People don't realize that the shelters and rescue groups get purebreds, and there's a lot of purebreds out there if you're preferring to go that route.
It's a really good point, Tim, and I think that, I mean, in addition to just your regular shelter, there are actually rescues set up for breed-specific animals. So you can, you know, if you're looking for a golden retriever, or you're looking for a lab, or you're looking for a chihuahua, you know, you can go to these breed-specific rescues and oftentimes find purebreds.
Exactly. A great resource, if your listeners are not familiar with it, is to go on the web and go to petfinder.com.
Mm-hmm.
Petfinder.com is a wonderful resource. You can go in there and type in the breed. You can type in your zip code. You can type in any search criteria that you wish, and it'll pull up the specific animal. So if you're looking for a golden retriever that's closest to you, you type in your zip code, golden retriever, and voila, it'll give you a list of the golden retrievers and pictures of them and descriptions. If you're looking for a horse or a ferret, they have that also. All across the nation. So it's a wonderful resource to check out as well.
It is. It's a great resource. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to have you here. And just keep up the excellent, amazing work. I think it's so wonderful that you are bringing this information to your community and supporting the animals in that way. I think it's really wonderful. So thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it, Christine, and if your listeners want to keep up on what's going on with me, they can look at my website, which is www.wagging.com, and I'll tell you a little bit more about who I am and what I do and all the wonderful events going on. So I appreciate it, and I appreciate your time. It was a joy talking to you and your listeners today.
Great. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so looking at more stories in the news, there's a real stir happening in Kansas and Wyoming as dog lovers are challenging the status quo and insisting that rabies laws and ordinances be changed to reflect the Animal American Hospital Association, American Animal Hospital Association's recommendation that 3 years rabies vaccines be the protocol. And that was introduced more than 5 years ago, that recommendation. Kansas and Wyoming are two states that still mandate a one-year vaccine, but hopefully this will soon change due to the work of Chris Christine at the Rabies Challenge Fund and concerned and informed dog lovers in these states. Never underestimate how much weight our voices carry. I say that all the time, but never underestimate it and never back down from speaking up about what you know is true. Chris Christine will join me next week to update us on the Rabies Challenge and also on recent developments in her fight for dogs, and there are a lot, and it is great. So I can't wait to have her on next week. Let's see what else we have. We talked about Flex Pets. This was interesting. The Associated Press reported that at a time when employers are scaling back on costly health benefits, pet insurance is gaining popularity as an employee benefit. Veterinary Pet Insurance, the nation's largest pet insurer, saw its corporate accounts balloon from 15 to 1,600 in the past 6 years. About 15% of veterinary pet insurance policies, or about 50,000, now come from its corporate accounts. So I find that interesting. I mean, I think probably because it's something that doesn't cost that much for employers to provide for their employees, and it lets their employees feel like they're actually receiving something that is really important and really a benefit to them. So that's a nice thing, and I think, you know, if you are in a corporation, you could probably talk to your human services or human relations, whatever that department is, about, you know, whether or not this is something that the company could provide, because I think it does help people, helps them feel better. And a lot of corporations are allowing people to bring their pets to work, too. So, there's a big shift in the corporate world around recognizing our connection and our relationship to our animals. I can remember when I was working at the Colorado Symphony, probably almost, I don't know, what, 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, one of my colleagues, her cat passed away, and there wasn't this real understanding of why she was upset as she was. And I mean, I got it. I really understood how upset she was, but there wasn't a whole lot of empathy or sympathy for her. And I think that that's changing to a degree, which is nice. I thought this was funny. According to John Tevlin, a reporter at the Star Tribune in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Senator Dick Day, who's running for Congress, is opposing a legislative initiative to let dogs sit with owners in outdoor cafes. Tevlin received this voice message from a reader. It said, quote, "This is Clyde. I'm reading your story about Rover being able to be at the table. Dick Day say he don't want to sit next to a dog. Well, I'd rather sit next to a dog than have him and some of those other bleep, bleep, bleeps who hate animals so much. Thank you and have a good day." So I thought that that was funny. He really struck a chord with that article. And I'm not sure how far Dick Day will go with opposing letting people sit outside with their dogs. Next week we're having Chris Christine, and as I mentioned last week, I did the Conscious Living show, and we talked about the 10 most important questions. So I really encourage you to go to blogtalkradio.com/conscious-living. And you can listen to the archives of those shows. And they were really interesting. We basically looked at two questions a day. I had a co-host. Mostly it was Karen Taggart from Care2.com. And one day it was Robin Erler, who's also with Care2.com. And then we had a couple of guests come on. But we talked about the questions on, I think, day three. So on Wednesday we had Jane Laurent from the Green MBA, who did just amazing information about the economy and looking at it from a different perspective. So it was really interesting information, and I encourage you to check it out. Again, if you have questions that you want to ask me about your animals, you can always call into the show, or you can call the Enlightened Listeners line, but don't expect a call back from me or an email. I can't do that, so you have to listen for your response on the show. Okay, so I think with that, we're coming to the end of today's show. My closing thought for today is I really feel that we must get back in touch with our connection to the earth, nature, and our own innate ability to heal. For the animals we care for, there are many ways to help support them, and it's not right that we've stripped animals of their natural ability to heal themselves. We owe it to them to explore the means that will help them retain their connection with their higher spirit, and in helping them, we will rediscover our own connection. So thanks for listening to Conscious Animal Radio. Tune in next Monday, April 7th, when my guest will be Chris Christine, co-founder of the Rabies Challenge Fund. Have a great week. I'll see you next Monday at 12 noon Eastern.